Hello and welcome to another Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, where we take an in-depth look at the newest G.I. Joe comics and related titles of the week, with me as your host, Chris Hive Mind McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. Joining me on this episode is Brian, oh Hickey, you're so fine, you blow my hive mind, hey Hickey. On this installment of your absolutely favourite...
Best name. I'm making a business card.
That's a long one as well. On this installment of your absolutely favourite kind of burst, we check out the Hasbro Creators Showcase Synergy. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this comics burst. In recognition of Women's History Month, IDW and Hasbro are teaming up to create Synergy, a Hasbro Creators Showcase. A celebration of fan favourites and new talent working with some of the most beloved Hasbro characters, with 13 fabulous covers drawn from the IDW archives and 27 pages of new material, including autobiographical works by Margaret Scott, drawn by Sarah Pietradurucha, reuniting the creator team behind the beloved Transformers Till All Are One series, and Katie Cook, writer on the hit My Little Pony comic, as well as three original stories inspired by G.I. Joe, Transformers and Gem and the Holograms. This anthology celebrates the women who have made or will make an impact on the world of Hasbro for many years to come. Now, the odd thing about this comic, obviously, is it's not your standard kind of comic to review in this case, but we've got lots of little one-off shots, little kind of bits and pieces in here that are kind of fun, and we'll talk about all of them, even though, you know, we do tend to focus on the Joe and the Transformers stuff. But we're given quite a broad range of different styles in writing and kind of drawing here. And a couple of things to mention are that some of the stories do operate within a continuity and some of them don't. So in terms of the Transformers or the RC story, which kind of pops up first, that actually operates in the just gone continuity, like the continuity that doesn't exist in the Transformers universe anymore because they've moved on. Brian, take us through your thoughts on how was the comic for you overall? How did you kind of take it? How did you enjoy it, et cetera, et cetera?
When I got this first, I sat down with my eight-year-old, and he reads a lot of comics as well, but not the same stuff I read. And he's looking at this and he's going, what's going on here? And I said, oh, it's a comic, you know. We've got some G.I. Joe, we've got some Transformers, we've got some My Little Pony. And he immediately laughed and thought, what's My Little Pony doing in a comic with G.I. Joe? And one of the first things that I thought to myself was, oh, I'm going to read this to you, but maybe I'll read it myself first and just make sure that, you know, the content's appropriate before we sit down and read it together.
Yeah.
But when I did read it, I mean, the content is totally appropriate, you know, but a lot of the themes and ideas probably go way over his head. So yeah. We haven't sat down together yet to read it, but I'm actually looking forward to reading specifically that My Little Pony story. Although I think the G.I. Joe story, definitely he won't know what the hell's going on in that.
Yeah.
But overall, this is something that I've really loved. The artwork is incredible. I mean, it's as much... There's two really strong facets to this. The artwork, number one, and the writing as well. And they're both equally amazing. But for me, I'm a visual guy. I'm a graphic designer. And the first thing I go to is the art. So I have a kind of a flick through. You see a lot of these covers, which I would have been familiar with from, you know, comics that have been previously released, particularly on the Joe side of things. But even the artwork within the individual stories and the panels there, it's just a visual feast, and it's beautifully, beautifully illustrated. And many different styles. In fact, I don't think any of the styles are similar. No. They're all completely unique.
How good is the art for the RC little story? Like, I mean, the story, it's very, very contained. It kind of takes you one direction and then shows you a completely different, you know, kind of situation that she's kind of under. Like, she's known, like, RC, I've always loved the character RC from the moment that IDW kind of started. And I know that this isn't your remit, Brian, but the way that IDW kind of dealt with RC as a character was really good. They made her this kind of kick-ass assassin, and, you know, like loads of, like, on a conflicting emotional kind of stuff going on, but she kind of like is just this, I don't know, like no nonsense to the point direct character. And she's a warrior first and foremost, and coming to the end, I suppose, of the run of the continuity that we've just had, the 13-year run that IDW put together, this almost sits just at the very end of that continuity, where you know, it's like there's a mention of Unicron.
The end is near. Unicron is coming.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's it kind of shows, kind of puts you in a position to know where this kind of fits into that continuity. She's basically saying that living now as a normal person on a non-war-torn planet is a struggle for her because she only knows the kind of warrior ways. And it's just really fun how she, you know, like it, the way that she reacts to kind of road rage. And then, like, you know, almost like take, you know, destroy the
guy. It's actually brilliant. I mean, I'm familiar with RC from the combined universe, and I do love this where the guy's barging through in traffic. Eat my dual booster dust, idiots!
Yeah.
And the next thing, you know, RC transforms and, you know, he's got a sword on the guy's throat. And, you know.
And then, like, everyone's just honking at her to kind of get out the way, aren't they? I love that. It's like, you know, she thinks she's doing like some, I suppose, service to everyone, and they're just like, just let him go and get out the bloody way.
Yeah.
And it's cute that, you know, she ends up kind of like, I suppose, going home at that point and just kind of going, trying to understand the world that she now lives in, and ends up just going and sits on the couch with her little transformer cat.
I love that. I mean, I wonder if there's a little bit of, you know, autobiography in that story, yeah, as
no
well,
doubt.
Like for the writer.
No doubt.
You know, like a tough day at the office, road rage on the way home, but there's nothing like just kicking your feet off or kicking your shoes off and just sitting back and relaxing once you get in.
Yeah.
It's a lovely little story. And that's what I love about all these stories. They're simple, they're short, but brilliantly written.
Yeah. It's quite a difficult thing to have to kind of, I suppose, like put across a story in a very short space of time. And where you had, I suppose, like the old comic strips back in the day, the really short ones, they were kind of part of an ongoing arc and an ongoing story. So you kind of read it and then anticipated the next one and so on and so forth. So it wasn't like you're having to deal with a beginning, middle and end in a very short space of time. You're just in a never-ending cycle kind of thing. But with this, it's like you've got three pages, you've got to tell your story, and then you've got to get out. How do I do this? What kind of area do I focus on? So it's I think with RC as a character, it makes sense to do something like this, and it's almost feels natural that's probably what I think a lot of creators would have done, given that you've got a short space of time to tell a story. It's about RC. What do you do? I mean, the first thing I would have thought of would be, well, put her out of a comfort zone. Do you know what I mean? Something along those lines. And that kind of just, I think it's a very natural story to tell for her.
Do you know, putting RC out of her comfort zone is to put her into a time of peace.
Yeah.
Even just to come up with that as a concept and as an idea is great. And like you say, the three pages, writer has to be super economical with how they get that story across.
Yeah.
But not diminish any of the impact. It's simple, beautiful, brilliantly done.
And then we get Ghost, which is the G.I. Joe story on here, and I thought it was quite interesting that they used an illustration of Scarlet on the kind of intro page, considering, yes, it's got, well, I suppose in a way it's got something to do with Scarlet because of her connection to Snake Eyes, but it just seemed like, you know, you'd be more appropriate to use a Dawn or Snake Eyes, you know, Dawn Moreno as Snake Eyes kind of image. But again, it's, you know, it doesn't matter. It just gives us more awesome things to look at because it's a very, very cool drawing of Scarlet. But then, I mean, we get a very kind of introspective view now, because this is something that the comics have definitely kind of touched on, but very, very briefly, because they've been too focused, I suppose, in the action element of it in the recent Dawn Moreno stories. So what we get here is this kind of like introspective into her mind.
This is actually the first story I went to straight away. And I suppose it's the one that totally caught me off guard because there was no action in it. That it was entirely character driven.
Yeah.
And I was blown away. I was actually blown away when I got to the end of these three pages.
Quite powerful, yeah.
It's incredibly powerful. The fact that, and I think the reason why Scarlet is represented at the intro there is that Dawn Moreno basically is in love with her. She's in love with Scarlet because she has those Snake Eyes feelings in there.
That's a very good point.
This is a very, very complex character. Now, I have to say, I've been a huge fan of Larry Hama and I love everything he does. So anyone, you know, regular kind of listeners to the podcast know, 5 stars for Larry the whole way. But this was after showing me something completely different.
Yeah.
I think Emma Vicelli's work here is it's taken a real American hero continuity and put it in a whole new place for me. This is an exceptional piece of work. Really is 3 pages, 100% character driven, doesn't need any action to make it a great story. It's just brilliantly done.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was, again, it's like you kind of forget sometimes when you're dealing with like an action comic like Joe that, you know, you've got this Dawn Moreno character who's got Snake Eyes basically in her mind, but it's more complex than that. She actually, like you say, carries feelings and thoughts and memories and all this kind of stuff of Snake Eyes. And it's almost like having the two, her personality and his, kind of like merged and mixed and sloshed about in her head. And it's some that kind of aspect you don't really think about. You just think from an action perspective, you just think, oh, she's just a kick person now because she's got Snake Eyes skills and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, it's not that simple. There's like almost so many layers to this that this particular story really does kind of open your eyes to. And I think, you know, whether you're a fan or not of the whole Dawn Moreno situation, there's a really interesting philosophical angle to come at here with this particular story that Larry has set up and that Emma Vicelli has explored here, isn't there?
There's potentially some really good points here that could be incorporated into the real American hero continuity. The feelings that she has for, you know, Snake Eyes' former lover, all those memories that he has. Well, look, we know Larry's kind of playing on that stuff too, but this takes it a little bit deeper. But that also said, it's an entirely contained arc because it starts out with this, you know, fear of ghosts, this realization that she's inhabited by a ghost. And if you look at that very last panel, it's just a sliver of a panel at the very, very end, and it focuses in on Dawn Moreno's eyes and the absolute focus, the determination that's in that look that's captured in that. And she's totally come to terms with who she is and what's happened to her. And you know, so you don't have to springboard off on other kind of stories or sub-themes beyond this. It's just a beautiful little character arc story here. It's closed out really, really well, beautifully illustrated, beautifully written.
Absolutely. Then we get Recharge, which is about Gem and the Holograms. And I have to admit, I was getting the Gem and the Holograms comic back in when it first came out from IDW. Because I was kind of on that, I suppose, that kind of 80s nostalgia trip. Because I used to love Gem, the original cartoon. I used to see it. It was on really early in the morning on like a weekend or something back in the UK, when it was kind of like on repeats and stuff like that. And I used to love it. I used to watch it all the time. So when the comic came out, I thought, you know, I'll give it a try and check it out. And it's certainly not, I'm not the target audience. No, like absolutely not. But I got a lot of like enjoyment out of reading that comic. And, you know, I haven't picked up since I've been in the US. I don't know, it just went out of my head, I suppose. So I haven't actually been kind of keeping up with what's been going on. But it really kind of is, it seems to be, everyone still seems to be in the same similar situation than when I left it. And this particular story is quite interesting because it focuses on a couple of things that I'm sure, you know, again, a lot of, again, like I said, the target audience is probably going to be more about women in this particular sense. But it deals with topics and issues that men have too, but it just aren't talked about and aren't discussed from a male perspective because of, I suppose, the way that men are, you know, and the way that men have been for so long, and to not be confident enough to discuss emotional, and in this particular story, we're talking about fat shaming, and we're talking about almost like, you know, kind of getting stuff on the, you know, getting bullied on the internet to a degree. And that's something that we kind of didn't have to really go through as kids, because it wasn't a thing back then, really, was it, for us?
No, I mean, we didn't have the internet. It was, bullying obviously did exist, but not that kind of, you know, cyberbullying. In fact, it's not even something that I even deal with today. So I still can't even relate to what people might be going through when they experience something like that. What I do love about this particular piece is that this is somebody, the character that's kind of focused on here is someone who is really comfortable in her own skin. And I love that in particular, you know, that idea of that concept, someone who's happy with themselves. So whatever, you know, bullshit happens out on the internet, it can't really hurt them.
Yeah,
they're stronger than that. And I do love that. Visually in this story here, it's the color palette is very soft. It's very gentle. And maybe that's something that is, I'm not familiar with the Gem comics, so maybe it's kind of common throughout the Gem comics, but I really love this kind of color palette. It's much, much softer than what we've seen in the two stories previous.
Yeah, it's very much like the 80s colors, but then modernized in like a more design aspect, you know, in like a modern design aspect. But I must admit, I think that the messages that are coming out are very important, and they're important to discuss and important to kind of highlight. So I think that it's something that as a man, you have to kind of, I suppose, see from a female perspective. You have to kind of look at through, you know, someone's eyes in that situation and go like, how the f*** would you feel being torn apart on the internet for how you look? Do you know what I mean? I just find it's awful. I mean, the only kind of relatable feeling I can get is when someone puts some like a nasty comment on, you know, a post of yours that you end up kind of, or it's another post that you know, in like a group or something, and you end up having this back and forth argument with a troll who just their only end game is to make you feel like shit and to react and to get a rise out of you, and that's all they give a shit about. So that's the only thing you can kind of relate to, and I just don't even give them the time anymore. You know, if someone's going to go online and start berating you for whatever reason, then I'm sorry, but block, see you later, I don't care, say what you want about me behind my back, I couldn't give two shits. If you have such a problem with me as a human being based on very little, because I don't know what it would be based on, then there's no need for you to be in my life. And they'll leave you alone, they'll go on to the next person, you know, and they'll just keep doing it like that until they're completely blocked by every single thing in the world and they can't operate anymore.
That's one of the great things about the internet is the block feature on social media.
Yeah.
It's a great feature. And I'm lucky enough that most of the people I interact with, I don't need to block them because they're all beautiful, amazing people. And that's a great thing, which I'm very, very happy about. But bringing it back to our story here, yes, you're absolutely dead right, Chris. It's touching on themes that, you know, maybe it's tougher for some guys to relate to. But it's great to be able to get a chance to kind of to see things from a different perspective, which we're not used to seeing, perhaps, and at least try and understand that somehow.
We also get what I think my favourite story from the whole lot is the My Little Pony story, which we get following the Gem one. So what were your thoughts on this one? Because I thought this was really cute.
Best story in the world. This and the last story are the best stories in for me. As much as I love, you know, I went straight to Ghost, went straight to the G.I. Joe story, first one, and then I went to My Little Pony, and I just love this. This is Katie Cook. It's a very kind of, you know, biographical account of her relationship with My Little Pony, bringing it right through her childhood into her professional career.
It's that picture of her as a kid on there that's just brilliant, isn't it?
That was a great... I wonder, was that kind of beautiful head that's worked in there? And then it comes full circle. She's a parent with her kids and obviously they're into My Little Pony, and she's down on the floor playing with her kids. And I've got to tell you, that is something that doesn't last for long. You know, 18 months ago, myself and Liam be down the floor with the G.I. Joe figures, having battles on the floor. He's a bit older now. And, you know, anyone who met me at Joe Con back in 2017, Liam was with me. He was kind of my sidekick. He absolutely loved the hobby, and he picked up a load of stuff. But you know what? In a few short months, he became a teenager, and his interests have totally shifted.
Well, give it a couple of years, he'll be back
when he's
41, he'll be all over that again, like us.
But I do love that those last couple of panels where Katie's down on the floor with her two kids and they're playing away, and it's just that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
It's lovely as well, because there's just so many kind of like interesting points in there, like the fact that, you know, she started off as a huge fan as a kid, then she gets the opportunity to work on it as an adult, and then she has kids, and then she's trying to tell the kids that, you know, how important she is within this, you know, the kind of new My Little Pony era and how that My Little Pony is designed after me and that kind of thing. And they're just like, whatever, Mom. You know, it's like, even no matter what you do in life, your kids are never going to think you're cool after a certain age. You know, they just won't.
I tell them all the time, hey, I'm kind of a big deal. You guys need to, like, you know, be listening to me, and, you know, I'm on the internet.
Oh, that's amazing. But yeah, and then obviously, you know, playing with the kids at the end and being the one that takes over the characters that they don't want to be, and they're both happy and they're all playing. And it's just really, it's a lovely story. And there were moments in there that you kind of, you know, that touch you as well. And for like I said, for it to be a comic that is effectively showcasing women in comics and at Hasbro, and showcasing, you know, creative talent, women creative talent. It's funny that the comic should, you know, have any relation to us, but it does, because let's face it, we're all f***ing people at the end of the day, and we all go through these experiences. There are much different experiences between the sexes, but let's face it, things will relate. And this one particularly hit me, you know, right there, especially when I saw the picture of her as a kid. I was like, that's brilliant. That is such a good touch.
What I love as well is that there's an element, or one of the sub-themes, I guess, in this, is that it's holding on to a dream and believing in yourself.
Yeah.
And believing that you can go after that. So many people just quit on the things they want to do. And they get beaten down by jobs and society.
Yeah,
this is, you know, somebody, we're getting very philosophical here tonight, Chris. Bloody hell, this is somebody like holding on to those dreams, saying, yeah, I'm gonna go for this. Yeah, I'm gonna, you know, do comics. I'm gonna, you know, put a tweet out here about My Little Pony. Boom, I've just landed a job. I'm gonna go for this. It's, you know, I love that.
Yeah, same. And then we end up finally getting to the kind of Windblade story, don't we? The Air Razor story, which kind of turns into that. But this is really, really cool. Again, it's like, you know, the story of the childhood and, you know, the sister and the older sister and their kind of relationship growing up, and how when they were kids, they loved Beast Wars, but even though there weren't any female characters in it. Do you know what I mean? Like, so they had this, they always thought, well, that character should be female, and everyone knows Velociraptors are female. There's a whole movie about it, and so on and so forth, which I thought was a cute little touch. But you know, and again, like, it's from that perspective growing up that you and I probably wouldn't have that same experience, because we were kind of targeted, weren't we? We had all of the cool stuff thrown at us, and it's like, you know, we really enjoyed and we really loved, because there's tons of male characters in there.
Targeted is the word. It was, you know, we have boys buy this toy, or boys of a certain age buy this toy. Let's, all our kind of content marketing is going to target these guys. And probably some executive dude held up a picture of a 10-year-old boy in a feckin', you know, boardroom and said, yeah, this is our typical, you know, or the sweet spot, the bullseye market right here. So it's a nice kind of angle, I suppose. Not that it's an angle, it's not an angle for the writer, but for me, looking at it, it's nice to see a very different play on that target market, that actually, you know what, they're not 10-year-old boys, it's two girls here.
Yeah.
And the way they played is exactly how I would have played with my brothers.
Yeah, when we were playing like so. Ever living shit out of each other.
Out of each other, yeah, and arguing over technicalities. No, you can't shoot at me when you're in beast mode. That element of it, I completely relate to. Rolling in the back garden, me and my brother pulling each other by the hair, fighting over stuff. You know, but again, it just follows the, you know, the creator on that journey, how they kind of come through that sort of very male focused world, but still hold on to this hope and this kind of, you know, unwavering focus on what it is they want, and know where they're going. And again, I totally love that aspect of our kind of central character in this story. And then how that career ultimately begins to kind of unfold. It really is a beautiful story. And that last shot of Mairead Scott, you know, at the convention and everybody kind of queuing up, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, totally cool. And again, like, as well as the little stories, you also have loads of like beautiful like covers and one-off pieces of art connected, you know, again, like all female showcase talent and stuff. And one piece I'd like to kind of point out as well in the show is the Kay Zama kind of art that she did with Dawn Moreno in a snake eyes garb with the swords out at the foot of like a beautiful like Japanese kind of one of those buildings and stuff that you see in feudal Japan type style. Just absolutely gorgeous.
It's the elevated view makes that even much more dramatic.
Yeah.
We're massive fans of Kay Zama's art here on the Full Force, and everything I see is just so beautiful.
For me, it was a surprise. Like because usually with these kind of little collected edition type things, I just kind of like flick through it and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. But this one actually, there seems to be quite a lot of, I know there's purpose in there and there's kind of like meaning and so on and so forth. And you don't always need that in your comics, but I think every now and again, it's good to have that kind of in there. And obviously what we've got here is some really from the heart, kind of heartfelt writing and just awesome artwork combined to make a very enjoyable little read as a, you know, just as a little kind of bonus, really.
You know, I think it does raise the bar. What we can bring it back to our kind of real American hero stuff. I mean, I do love Larry, but seeing what can be done with these characters and the places that you can go with the storytelling, oh, you know, there's so much potential. Much potential there. You know, I kind of understand a little bit why, you know, Paddy doesn't always go full on with the potatoes, you know, because, you know, he's a writer and he knows what can be done. You know, he knows what potential is there to be achieved. So that was a nice little insight for me reading through Synergy there the last couple of days. It's been brilliant.
And finally, give us a potatoing for Synergy.
Ah, going all out, six potatoes here. This is just brilliant.
Awesome. I'm gonna throw out a five. I'm impressed that you can have little self-contained stories in such a small space and actually have something that you can get through and read and enjoy and go, okay, yeah, cool, rather than just throw away kind of stuff, which I don't think this, I just don't think any of them are. I think it's quite a solid, it's a solid comic.
Solid. And buy it. Guys, get out there, pick it up. It's only, what, $7.99? Best $7.99 you're going to spend, you know, this month. You won't regret it.
Awesome. Brian, thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, it was great. I absolutely loved it.
That's it for this installment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-host, Brian Hickey. See you next time, and as always, Full Force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter @TheFullForce, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback or questions. We have also started a Patreon page, so if you want to see your name up in lights on these videos or enjoy exclusive bonus content, then check out patreon.com/TheFullForcePodcast or click the link on any of the posts this podcast appears in. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.